Well, Len, it's been some interesting times in the golf world here over the last week or so since we've last volume of the podcast, and the Florida swing is wrapped up, and Phil Mickelson's absence from golf is still a big topic of discussion. And now in Michigan, Oakland Hills is landing numerous more USGA championships. And also, the weather is changing here up north, and towards the end of next week and next weekend, 8 or 9 days from now, more and more of the golf courses are talking about opening for the summer. So it's interesting. And what is also interesting is a little bit about this week's PGA Tour event, the match play. And it's not, again, about who's there. It's maybe a little bit about who isn't there. But we'll get to that in a minute. Let's start in Florida, your neck of the woods. And there is, there's been some exciting golf the last couple of weeks for a lot of different reasons, both at the Players' Championship and then again this last week at the Innisbrook Resort, the Copperhead Course, and the Valspar Championship. So let's hear your take a little bit on the Florida swing and what you saw from being at all these tournaments.
You know, the Florida swing was really terrific. This year, our Florida swing, it involves not just the four PGA events, but also since 2022 began, we had the first three events on the LPGA tour. We covered four tours. We had an event on the Corn Ferry Tour and an event on the Senior PGA Tour Champions as well. But these last 4 weeks, Roy, they've really been extraordinary. The men's Florida swing started with the Honda Classic, an event that had a sudden rainstorm in the final round, which really turned the tournament around. We saw Sepp Straka become the first Austrian champion in the history of the PGA Tour after Daniel Berger led a 5-shot lead go in the final round. Of course, then we went to the Arnold Palmer, a tournament which had a lot of a controversial tournament because the course was set up very strangely, very more difficult than in the past, kind of very controversial. Scottie Scheffler won only five under par golf. That's all it took to win that one. Then we had, of course, the very strange weather at the Players' Championship, which extended the tournament into a Monday finish. The Valspar tournament last week, which is the closest to where we live, it was just a great tournament. And I tell you, I can't remember a finish quite as exciting as that when the last putt in the sudden death playoff goes from 33 feet away, circles, it's almost basically a 360, and drops in. It was a very exciting 4 weeks here, and frankly, I'm kind of ready for a little bit of a break. We saw 7 of the 9 tour events across 4 tours in the last 2 months, and now it's time to get thinking about golf travel and visiting our old friends in some of the various golf resorts and getting back to Chicago.
Well, that means pretty soon you'll have to fire up the Zeem machine and head north and maybe stop at a few destination properties along the way. But right now, the interesting thing about this week is it's the match play. It's a WGC event. And again, they're talking about who is not there, including the last two winners of the last two PGA events from the Players and Valspar. And of course, Phil Mickelson is not there. Rory McIlroy and a couple other guys are going to go up to Augusta this week and continue their preparation for the Masters. So I know that third place finisher last year, Matt Kuchar, is also not in the field because I selected him this week as my fantasy golfer of the week in a fantasy golf championship, and he's not in the field. So so much for bringing back your top finishers of the previous year, having people in the field again that played good at the tournament the year before. So I know that one of the big topics, it's not who's there, but it's who isn't over in Austin, Texas for the match play.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, the PGA Tour, I feel they should always have a match play championship somewhere on its calendar, and this would seem like the logical place as a lead into the Masters. A player could get a top level competition. I mean, the Wednesday of the match play, when all the top players supposedly would be there. Sends that tournament off to a rousing start every year, but of course now it's not the case. Way too many players are missing it. You can sort of see it coming, though. I mean, the focus is that now that the Florida swing is over, the focus is on Augusta. The focus is on the Masters. And it's going to be a special event, but as it always is in Augusta. But it's kind of a shame about this week because it's a big tournament, a big event. The only match play real challenge, other than the team events at the end of the year. But way too many players are missing in this one.
Len, down in your neck of the woods is the Saddlebrook Resort, just a little north of you. And yeah. I've never been there, but I know you went with a group of media last year. But things are changing there at the resort. As a matter of fact, it's already closed. It's been bought, and a massive renovation coming to this Florida property. Not only the hotels, the golf courses, the tennis facilities, major overhaul coming on food and beverage. And from everyone I've heard of since we've posted this on our website and online, is people saying that they were there last year or a few months ago, and they're saying that the place still looked like it was 1970. So you were there last year. What did you see? And was it obvious that it was ready for this type of renovation?
I'll tell you, this is Wesley Chapel, Florida. It was a resort that had some Chicago connection in its previous ownerships. And it had its stay in the sun, but it obviously needed some work here. During the heart of the pandemic, Ian, the great India player, the young promising India player, he brought his whole family there, and they just stayed there for basically 2 months or 3 months while the PGA Tour got ready to play again. It's a resort that had gotten outdated. They were reaching into other sports groups, youth groups that would come and play there. We had a nice visit there. It was just it wasn't a real formal media day, but we had just Fred Elfbader, my friend from the Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan golf journals. He was there, and we were there, and that was it. We had a nice time. We saw the courses, but it was clearly a resort that was struggling. But I think it'll have, it's like Worldwoods. That was a very popular Florida golf destination that is soon to be closed and reworked, and it'll come out. I'm sure both those places will come out improved and popular once they're back in operation.
We briefly touched on this at the end of our last podcast, but it gets to be April and you start thinking about Georgia and the top golf destination in Georgia is Reynolds Lake Oconee. And you start thinking about properties that have more than three or four golf courses, and there's not too many. I mean, you've got Pinehurst, you got Bandon Dunes, and a couple of years from now, Sand Valley will have 418s and a par three course. But there's not a lot of resorts that really have more than about four golf courses, and Reynolds Lake Oconee has six, and it's only an hour away from Augusta National, and it's a great place to plant yourself if you have scored some tickets to the Masters Tournament and Green Jacket Week in Augusta.
I tell you, Reynolds Lake Oconee is a great place to go anytime. It's standing. I always wondered kind of if it's proximity to Augusta. It seems like during Masters Week, it'd be a great deal. But, of course, Augusta kind of overshadows everything in golf around it. But Reynolds Lake Oconee is just a wonderful place to go visit. A lot of friends of ours I have friends that live there from high school. I have friends who are involved in the marketing of it. Former Medina head pro Mike Scully was for a while there, the general manager. The town is Greensboro, Georgia, and it doesn't, it's overshadowed so much because it's close to Atlanta and yet it's close to Augusta. But a place well worth visiting, and I'm sure that during Masters Week, I know that during Masters Week, it's going to be a hopping place. But it's a hopping place a lot of other times as well. It's got great golf courses, lots of golf. That's even more important. But it'll be in the spotlight. For people coming to see the Masters, a lot of them are going to want to be at Reynolds Lake Oconee.
Well, Reynolds Lake Oconee not only has great places to stay, You can get a room in the Ritz-Carlton. You can stay in one of the cottages that they've built over by the National Golf Course near the National Tavern, which is a great place for food and beverage. And I've eaten there several times. It's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, if you want to do more than golf, there's options there, fishing and boating and hiking and tennis and all sorts of other things. And, you know, obviously, there is, you know, great places to eat right on property. And you know what? I'm sorry I missed that bourbon bar over there at the Ritz-Carlton. I understand it's one of the great places to grab a beverage while you're in the state of Georgia. So if you're thinking of travel to Georgia, especially if, again, if you're going to the Masters, think about staying only an hour away in Greensboro, Georgia at Reynolds Lake Oconee. And you know what? If you don't have tickets for the Masters, it's probably a great place to also watch the Masters in one of the clubhouses before or after golf. And you know what? Can't think of a better place that the general public can go play golf in the state of Georgia other than Reynolds Lake Coney. And of course, south of Atlanta, we also have the Gem 6 course, Summer Grove in Noonan, Georgia. And that's getting sort of put back into shape after some flooding issues right before Christmas. 14 inches of rain in 2 days did that to the Gem 6 golf property down there. But great golf in Georgia, great golf in the Atlanta area. And whether you're over at Summer Grove for a day or whether you're over at Reynolds Lake Oconee for several days, again, great golf in the Peachtree State. Great golf up here, Lenzie. And you know what? Always excited. You can tell it's golf season because one of the great area public courses that usually is one of the later ones to open its doors is our friends down at Misswood Golf Club in Romeoville, home of the Phil Kozin Illinois Women's Open. And they have announced that next week on March 31st, I believe that's Thursday, they will be out there playing golf. And so the Ray Hearn design will be very busy. And it's always a good thing when Misswood opens and the golfers get to go out and play there.
It sure is. Misswood opening, and so along with like Cog Hill and some of the other big public cases, that really, when they open, that really triggers the start of the Chicago golf season. Mistwood, of course, now is very much a premier site, both for tournaments and for play and social golf and dining. They have very good people over there. And I'm a little surprised that they're able to open quite this early. I mean, they're beating April, and that's a good sign for Chicago golfers, because I always felt like if you could get Chicago golf started in March when I lived there, that was always a good thing, but it didn't always happen. So it's, even if it's by a day, I think it's great that Misswood is about ready to open, and we're looking to get forward to getting back there and playing it again.
Glenn, news broke today in Michigan. The famed Oakland Hills Country Club that still somewhat reeling from the burning and the fire that took down its historic clubhouse is becoming somewhat of a Midwest USGA anchor site. They received 6 more tournaments from the USGA today. Earlier this year, before the fire, they had been announced 2 upcoming U.S. Women's Opens that would have been taking place in the next 10 to 13 years or so, but now they've added 2 men's U.S. Opens, 2034 and 2051. A U.S. amateur is mixed in there as well. Also, the U.S. junior girls and another championship as well. And they will have 8 tournaments in 27 years. And boy, it would sure be nice if we could get a club in Chicago to even get 5 or 6 USGA events over a span of 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, I was amazed by today's announcement. I think the eye catcher was that they awarded them a tournament back in all the way back to 2051. I mean, that's so far down the road. I've never heard of any group announcing a tournament that far in advance. But you know what? That club is a very special club. It has been very very loyal, such a long-time supporter of USGA events. They've had a very traumatic last month here with the fire destroying their clubhouse, a beautiful clubhouse. But you know it's going to get built back probably better than it ever was. And it'd be a shame if Oakland Hills, you know, I think it's just great that that they've been declared a site for all these tournaments way down the road after enduring such a such a tragedy on their own home turf.
Well, I can imagine that when that clubhouse gets rebuilt, and my understanding is that it'll be modernized a little bit, but it may look a lot, if not almost identical, to the old clubhouse. So it's nice that in some ways they're going to try to preserve some history there. It got published, you know, a week or so after the fire that firemen raced in there, and with help of club employees who didn't run out the door at the first sign of fire, that while they did lose some things, they also rescued quite a bit of the famed history that was up on the walls and under glass in various places in the clubhouse. So they will have a few things that will be still on display when the new clubhouse gets built, which might take a couple of years yet, but I'm sure it'll be fantastic when it reopens. Len, as a matter of fact, today got an email from Titleist talking about their new line of Scotty Cameron putters that's coming out here in just a short period of time. Early April, they'll be available in the pro shops and your golf retail stores. And it got me thinking a little bit about equipment. You and I talk about equipment from time to time. We write about equipment. We've talked a little bit about some of our local equipment companies that have include Tour Edge, Golf Out in Batavia, obviously Wilson Golf, you know, over a century in the industry. Their office is now downtown in Chicago. There is a new company making clubs in the Chicagoland area, Styx Golf, designing their own sets of clubs out in their factory in Elgin. So there are some club makers in town. Bettinardi, one of the famed putter designers, is down in Tinley Park. But it seems like every time I write a little something about equipment, every once in a while, I get a couple of inquiries. Well, what are you guys playing? You know, you talk to all these people, you get a chance to hit these clubs. And we didn't get to do that so much at the PGA merchandise show this year because, for the most part, the major club manufacturers were not there. But, you know, whether it's demo days, whether it's been the PGA merchandise show over recent years, we've had a chance to test a lot of clubs, get familiar with the brands that now seem to be launching clubs at different times of the years. But anyway, I thought we'd spend a little time talking about what clubs are in our bag. And of course, I'm sure as you will, getting fit is the right thing to do. And just because your favorite tour pro has an endorsement deal and he plays great with one of the major brands, doesn't always mean that that's the best clubs for you. And as always, my advice to golfers is hit the brand that helps you get the ball in the hole as fast as you can in every round you play.
Yeah, you know, it's funny about club selection. I've always been felt a little a loyalty, a special loyalty to the club manufacturers in Chicago, and that's grown in recent years. I mean, I play a lot of different clubs. I'm a big experimenter, especially I used to experiment a lot with drivers. Now I'm pretty well settled on a Tour Edge driver that I like a lot, and I'm very happy with the Tour Edge clubs in my bag now. But I've been happy with Wilson's in the past for years. I've got a Scotty Cameron putter that has been in my bag for, oh, I'll bet 10 years now, a putter there. It's not that I claim to be a great putter, but I am comfortable with that Scotty Cameron club. I have not shied away from the other club manufacturers. I'm an experimenter, I think. I'm not a low handicap player, so I don't claim to have the credentials of being an expert in determining balls or clubs or anything like that. I just know what I like. I experiment as much as I can. I'm not afraid to change clubs. Right now, the bulk of my clubs in my bag are Tour Edge. But again, I've got some clubs that, you know, wedges and stuff, the Cleveland wedge, that have been in my bag for quite a while. I've got a Wilson hybrid that I've had for many, many years. And you know, eventually those will get changed too. But that's kind of the fun of golf, is to tinker around and experiment, both in a lot of things in golf, balls and clubs. And I've been willing to do that.
Well, Len, I know that both of us technically, if we were out playing professional golf, we'd be on the Champions Tour because we both fall into the 50 and over bracket. But I know that Tour Edge has really made a mark out there on the Champions Tour, and I know their market is not just golfers 50 and over, but they really have scored well with a lot of players on the Champions Tour, including the guy they call the staple out there, Bernhard Langer, has got Tour Edge in his bag. And you know, it seems like there's something to their clubs, which have really gotten better in recent years, that identify with older players, including the best 50 and over players in the game.
Well, I think it was a great marketing strategy. Ellen, a genius, really, by David Glad over there at Tour Edge to focus so much on the Champions Tour, because they've got a lot of top. Tom, it wasn't just Langer; it was Scott McCarron, Tom Lehman. A lot of good players are using their clubs, some of which are not even officially on the Tour Edge staff. So you're right; they have made a big inroad in the golf marketing, basically because they focused so much on the Champions Tour, and it's my hat's off to them. They've made good clubs for quite a few years, and they're now competing very strongly with the bigger, more major brands. But I've always liked Tour Edge clubs. They're good folks, good clubs, and I'm sure I'll play these for a while.
What I've seen from Tour Edge in the last 3 or 4 years is nothing short of outstanding. And you mentioned Wilson as well. I know that they had a couple driver versus driver shows on the Golf Channel, but Wilson is still among the best companies in the world that make irons. And, you know, I think Wilson could prove what they put out a little bit in the world of putters and the world of woods and drivers and maybe hybrids. But when it comes to irons, they are a worldwide leader in those type of clubs. And, you know, I had Wilson clubs when I was growing up. A couple different sets. A real old set when I first started playing, which evolved into the Sam Snead Blue Ridges. And eventually I had a job at the Rob Roy Golf Course for many years. And they used to run a lot of specials with Titleist. And the Titleist rep lived in the area. He was at the club quite frequently and offered a lot of great deals there. And being an employee of the club, the pros there and the representative worked with me when I was looking for a new set of clubs. And I never adapted very well. I liked the McGregor tourneys, but turned out my grandfather found a deal on the Jack Nicklaus VIP clubs, which were a big seller at the time. And I had those clubs in the bag for a while, never really adapted to them too well. And then finally got turned into Titleist while I was working at Rob Roy. And not only their clubs, but, grew up using the old famed bullseye putter that so many of the old pros won a lot of money with on the tour, and continued along that line for many years. But times change, and the concept of club fitting, it just really opened my eyes to what could be done for my game. And I've been fit by, two of the major fitting companies that exist, and also, getting fitted and checked out by our friends at the Mistwood Golf Club and in the Mistwood Golf Dome. And really ran in there and said, let's test the brands. Let's see what works. And both companies and Mistwood, they ran me up against Callaway clubs, Titleist clubs, Ping clubs, TaylorMade. And so I worked through all four of those brands. Both companies and Mistwood all told me the same thing, that I was getting better numbers, better distance, better accuracy through Callaway just by a nose over Titleist, and falling a little further back was Ping. And then finally, for whatever reason, all three places told me that TaylorMade just doesn't seem to suit my game. And that doesn't mean they're a bad product. Obviously, there's a lot of professionals that are playing TaylorMade, and they you know, they're making a lot of money doing so. And I know they make great clubs, and a lot of people talking about their new stealth clubs that are coming out now and saying that maybe they're the best woods TaylorMade has ever had. But the one thing that I learned sort of by accident, I went to the Misswood Golf Dome to get pictures of the Callaway Rogue clubs in January because I knew they weren't going to be in Orlando, and somebody didn't show up for their fitting appointment. So the fitter worked with me and tested it against the Callaway clubs I had in my bag, against the Tour Edge clubs that I had in my bag, and the new Rogues were landslide winners. And I was just knocked off my feet and really surprised at how good they were for my game and I guess my swing at this time. So I've already made the switch out. We've got a new driver. Haven't been out the golf course with it yet, but like what I see in the dome on the driver and the irons, and I'm going to get back to Mistwood and work with Eric Russell and Matt Carter, their two fitters, and we're going to test my older Callaway fairway woods, a great pair of steelheads that I've had in there for several years that have been outstanding, and see how they stack up against the new Rogues and see if we're going to switch them out. I'm using Callaway Jaws irons, and I think that if you're looking for wedges, I should say, if you're looking for wedges, you know, you can't beat what Roger Cleveland puts out at Callaway, and Bob Vogt and his assistant Aaron Dill have put together over at Titleist. I still think those are the best sets of wedges out there. And currently I've got an Odyssey 7 putter in the bag. But this year, there's been so many recent changes in the putter world that I am going to start exploring and maybe go through several fittings for putters just to see if there is a newer Odyssey or a newer Callaway or a newer Scotty Cameron that I used to use Cameron for a long time. If there's something new on the market by one of those companies that might help me make a few more putts than I've been making in the last year or so.
Yeah, well, that's the fun of the whole thing. Everybody's game is different. It's different strokes for different folks, as they say, in choosing clubs. And you've been very experimental, more experimental than I have been. But I'm not afraid to change at all. I think that's part of the overall fun of golf is that. That is the variety in equipment. I mean, what works for one person doesn't work for another. And, you know, a lot of it's just a mental thing. Like what feels good, works good for you, that's the club you should play, regardless of the cost, the age of the clubs, the name on the club. It's part of the charm of the game.
Well, Len, it's been a great discussion, and we'll have to talk more about the world of golf when we come back next week. And by then, we should have a few more golf courses open in the Chicago area. With that, we'll talk to you then.